boardrooms love buzzwords. AI, climate, resilience.
But what do they actually mean for CFOs and execs trying to survive the next earnings call?
That's where the pre-read comes in.
Real experts and real talk.
Subscribe to the pre-read, presented by Workiva.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, October 31st. I'm Belle Lynn for The Wall Street Journal. You've probably used a web browser like Google Chrome or Firefox to navigate the internet, but have you tried an AI web browser yet? We're taking a look at how these new tools from OpenAI and others stack up. Plus, have you ever dreamed of outsourcing your chores to a robot? Well, that reality is here, sort of. We investigate the latest humanoid housekeeper robot to enter the market and why there's more to it than meets the eye. But first, the latest web browsers out there are supercharged with AI. They might have built-in chatbots or advanced agents that can do things for you online. I spoke with our personal tech columnist, Nicole Nguyen, about what these AI browsers can do and why they could change the way we use the internet forever. So, Nicole, tell us the difference between an AI browser and a plain vanilla web browser.
So the web browser that you've probably been using for the last decade or so is your portal to the internet. There's a URL bar, you type in a URL, or you Google something and you go to that web page. An AI browser is like a regular browser, except there's a little icon at the top that gives you a shortcut to an AI chatbot. So think of it as like a normal AI browser where you can expand a side panel and ask a question at any time. Sounds pretty simple, but the way it works is a little bit different from just talking to an AI chatbot. Because the AI browser has visibility into the page that you're looking at, you don't have to prompt it as much. It has contextual awareness of what you're looking at, and so you can ask it, like, make this vegetarian without actually having to spell out the recipe, for example.
That also sounds like a little bit creepy from a privacy perspective if you have the AI sort of looking over your shoulder as you're doing what could be private things on the web. How do you think about the risks or what we should keep in mind when we're using these types of AI browsers?
You're definitely sharing a lot more with the AI, just giving it access to what you're already browsing. And I'd say that anecdotally, at least, people tell a lot to their AI chatbots, probably far too much. And so they should pick the AI browser with the chat experience and privacy settings that they align with most. I would not open up your medical history and ask your AI chatbot to view that webpage and potentially use that data for future model training. There are, of course, settings where you can turn off model training, but when you use an AI browser, every time you expand that side panel, you are giving that AI company a window into your browsing history.
So there are certainly trade-offs to keep in mind. What about the benefits then that you discovered when testing out these different AI browsers? What were the main things that you found useful?
So the most futuristic element to these AI browsers is that some have agentic capabilities. Perplexity's Comet and OpenAI, which just launched their AI browser recently called ChatGPT Atlas, have the ability to click and type around for you using an AI bot. So they take over your tab and you can watch this robot painfully, slowly look up flights or do whatever you task it with. And there's a kind of magic to letting it do a tedious task like finding all the ingredients for a recipe that I wanted to make and adding it to my Whole Foods cart on Amazon, for example. But there are also new risks with this kind of magic. A new kind of hacker attack called a prompt injection attack hides secret instructions for the AI chatbot, which are malicious in the URL or the website itself. And so you can really only do this on websites that you trust. But the beauty of using an AI browser versus using an agent inside of an AI chatbot is you don't have to hand over your credentials to the AI company in order for it to do its work. I'm already in a logged in state on Amazon or Google Calendar, and so it can work agentically without me having to compromise my own security.
How quickly do you think these browsers will take to catch on with people more broadly?
It remains to be seen which app in particular will take off, But the incumbents, including Google Chrome, which has the biggest market share in the world, is releasing its own AI chatbot called Gemini in Chrome. It's rolling out to most US users. And so I think that once people start to use AI in their web browser and get used to that in an incumbent, maybe they'll be more willing to switch to Comet from Perplexity or ChatGPT Atlas from OpenAI.
That was WSJ personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen. Coming up, robot helpers are the stuff of sci-fi fantasy and sci-fi horror. No matter which side you're on, the fact is they're coming soon. We examine how one humanoid robot on the market actually works. After the break.
Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pros' number one most trusted app. Finding a home is like dating. You're searching for the one. With over 500,000 new listings every month, you could find the one today. Download the Realtor.com app because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings. February 2024 through January 2025.
Standing at 5 feet and 6 inches tall, the company OneX's Neo robot is expected to ship to households next year. But before you rush to buy one, there are plenty of limitations and risks to be aware of, and a few things to get excited about. WSJ senior personal technology columnist Joanna Stern is here to help us investigate how the Neo humanoid robot actually works, the subject of her latest column and video, including why there's an actual human involved in its operation right now. Joanna, let's start by talking about the robot itself. What does it look like?
If you've seen humanoid robots, you have seen the kind that look like they work in an industrial factory. And Neo does not look like that. My first question to the CEO of 1X, actually, and to Neo, was, Neo, why are you wearing a sweater? It's 70 degrees out in California. And the answer was really good, that this is for aesthetics. We want to make this a more welcoming, cozy robot, but it's also for safety. And that's one of the big things that's different about Neo than some of the other humanoid robots that are being developed right now, is that they really are making this for the home, with the idea that it's not going to just work in factories, though they say that it will work in theirs, but their real focus is to build a robot that can do chores around your house. Empty the dishwasher, clean the counter, eventually cook, do your laundry, fold your laundry. And for them to do that, they really emphasize that it needs to be safe because robots can fall down. Robots could smack their arm and someone could be standing behind them. So they've tried to build this robot to be as close to a human as possible. And they're using special types of gears and tendons to mimic what human muscles and human biology looks like.
And you mentioned things like folding laundry and doing dishes. What are some examples of things that the Neo robot can currently do?
The Neo robot physically is capable of doing a lot of things. Now, it doesn't necessarily do those things very well yet. And so there's this idea that the 1X CEO, Bert Barnich, talked about in our interview, which is robotics slop.
It's the most useful kind of slop. Because if you put all of my glasses from my dishwasher in my cabinet, I'm pretty happy. It is going to be not perfect, but back to like just incredibly useful.
And so this idea is that, hey, like other AI slop, it's not great, but it's fine. And so as you also see in the video, it folds my sweater. It's not great at folding the sweater. It puts the forks and cups in the dishwasher. Not great at that either. It took the robot 5 minutes to load 3 things. So look, the idea is that eventually it's going to do all of these things perfectly, just like Rosie and the Jetsons, but that's not where we are today.
And can you talk a little bit about how the Neo robot works in terms of having a remote operator there in the background, peering into your living room or your kitchen or whatever room it may be?
So this is where it gets pretty wild and pretty crazy. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this story is that everything I saw Neo do during the day that I spent with it at its headquarters was being operated by a teleoperator. And this is really when a human in a VR headset with controllers controls the robot remotely and does pretty much everything that the robot's doing. So if you move your arm, the robot's arm moves. And so everything I saw it do, from clean the counters to put the dishes in the dishwasher, to water the plants, to fold that shirt was done by a VR operator or a teleoperator, a 1X employee. And so that was a lot of my conversation with 1X was, okay, you're shipping this in 2026, but right now this robot isn't doing anything really autonomously, which is obviously the goal of home robotics, right? We want these robots to do things on their own, not with a human operator across the country or across the world. And so the CEO told me that right now, many things this robot will be able to do on its own, but there'll be many things it needs help with, which will require teleoperation and will require an employee of their company or a representative of their company taking over the robot, being able to see through its camera eyes into your house and do things, which is a crazy privacy issue.
Besides giving up your privacy to a great extent, what are some of the other risks or potential downsides to the Neo robot? And what are the guardrails that 1X has put in place to prevent some of those things?
They have taken both precautions on the hardware end, but also on the software end to make sure that Neo right now doesn't lift a lot of heavy weights or objects. Neo at first won't be able to pick up anything sharp or heavy or hot, though eventually, as we trust Neo and these guardrails get better, it should do those things, right? Like you'd want it to pick up a knife to put in the dishwasher. You'd want it to pick up something very heavy and help you cart it around the house. But for now, they say there's a 50-pound weight limit on what Neo can lift, though the robot's actually capable of lifting far more.
What are some of the benefits of allowing the Neo robot into your home? And what else would an early adopter seek to or benefit from early on?
Early adopters, you are signing up right now to train this robot. You are not signing up for a super useful robot. And as you look at this thing, it looks a lot like a toddler trying to figure out the world. And you have to teach your toddler. It takes many years. And so that's what you're signing up for here. You're not signing up for great utility or usefulness. Will that come? Well, that's the bet the company's making. The company's betting that you will give it training data. All that video of Neo working in your house and loading the dishwasher are videos that then end up in Neo's world model, which is how they train it. Large language models required all the text of the internet, so much data, and that's all out there, but these robots don't have that kind of data. And so that's what 1X is trying to do here. So you are really helping beta test and build the training data for the robot eventually to be great in your house.
That was WSJ senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. Jessica Fenton and Michael Lavelle wrote our theme music. Our supervising producer is Katie Ferguson. Jessica Fenton is our technical manager. Our development producer is Aisha El-Muslim. Chris Zinsley is the deputy editor. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. Logging off for the weekend, I'm your host, Belle Lin. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.